This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Open Mic. It is Wednesday, May 14th. I'm your host, Johnny Kane, for Sportscaster.com, and we have a really solid show laid out for you tonight. A reminder, if you've never heard this program before, what differentiates Open Mic from some of the more traditional programs is that the interviews you'll hear are conducted by student broadcasters, individuals who hope to one day work in sports, and we have some good ones. You're going to hear some fresh voices along with some voices that you'll probably recognize, like the voice of the Red Wings, Ken Daniels, who is on the show tonight. Other featured guests include Steve Waterfield, Oakland University's athletic director. I think we all think we know what an AD does, but you'll gain a better understanding of exactly what that job entails, in particular at the Division I level, and also the responsibility that rests on that position on a college campus. We'll also talk NBA with the playoffs well underway. Pistons, of course, made the playoffs this season for the first time in 6 years. We'll go big picture on how things could shake out around the association. But I mentioned Ken Daniels off the top of the show. Ken is the play-by-play voice of the Wings on FanDuel Sports Network. We welcome to the show Cody Stedman. He's part of Sportscaster.com, and he's a senior from Saline High School. And Cody, you had a chance to interview Ken. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Johnny. As I had a chance to talk with Ken Daniels, I asked him a few questions along the lines of how he's getting used to a lot of changes in the recent years. And having that front row seat to the Red Wings has impacted him, especially as he looks back on his time in this career.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the one thing about Ken is he's got an unmistakable voice, unmistakable passion for the sport of hockey. I love being around him. In fact, I saw him just a couple of weeks ago and we chopped it up a little bit, just talking about sports in general. Obviously, the Red Wings season has come to a close. We're hoping that the Wings will join in the postseason fun that a lot of the other Detroit sports teams have experienced. What would you say was maybe the biggest takeaway you got from Ken?
I think the biggest takeaway I got from him was his attention to detail. Like, for instance, I asked him how to stay sharp during an 82-game season, and it's mind-blowing to me, his ability to be able to stay on point with his sports casting.
Yeah, and the other thing about Ken is when you watch the games, it feels like he has an intimate knowledge of everybody who takes the ice, and he threads in personal stories about the players when the timing is right. And obviously, the action is so fast-paced in the NHL, it's tough to weave and navigate, you know, where you're going to start to storytell. But Ken obviously been doing it for a long time, and he has found that perfect balance and blend of incorporating those types of stories within a telecast. And nobody's more prepared, nobody has more passion for the game than Ken Daniels. Looking forward to hearing this interview. Here is Saline High School's Cody Stedman with the voice of the Red Wings, Ken Daniels.
Ken, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Cody. Great to be with you.
So you've been calling games for the Red Wings since 1997. And a lot of students listening might not realize how much prep goes into calling every single game. So can you walk us through the routine before we go live on air for a Red Wings broadcast?
Well, Cody, it starts probably, you're thinking about the games you got coming up probably the week before, and I have the NHL package, so I'll watch games, record games, I can always go back and watch games. I always use the line that Mike Babcock told me one time, we're in the R&D business. It's not research and development, it's rob and do. So, you know, that's R&D. But you take stories that you may hear on a broadcast from a week earlier. I'll take notes. I've got files on every team. I'll put them in there. So if I go down to morning skate or I'm talking to the play-by-play guy of that team, whether it be radio or TV, or the coach of that team, if I'm familiar enough with them, or a player from that team, there may be a story that I have heard that I want to flesh out a little bit more. And try to get a little bit more on that. So really, it starts there, probably the week before games you got coming. And the day of the game, we have a conference call at 9:30 every morning with our entire group. We put the stories out there that we want to talk about. Then I'll talk with my producer. I don't go down to every morning skate, especially if I've seen the team a lot, but they skate at 10:30 and 11:30, the home team, then the visiting team. So the key is, Cody, I think when I'm in there talking to a player and maybe he's telling a story or something happened or a contract was signed and he's staying in town, if that player is talking for a couple of minutes, I'll in my head be listening to him saying, how can I tell this story in 15 or 20 seconds? How can I get the gist of that story out of a commercial break? And then I'll go home and I'll make some notes from what he said and write it out. So really it starts there, the morning skate. And then in the afternoon, I'm prepping on the other team and getting notes on them, go back to notes that I had earlier in the season, do a lineup card, write out my opening and the goalies and everything else and rehearse in my head. Really, I don't memorize numbers, something because I know our team. If I'm doing two teams, yeah, you maybe memorize numbers a little bit. But I know most of the players, the third and fourth line guys, I know who they are. And within a couple of minutes of the game, I have them down pat anyway. So the research starts a few days before the game even appears.
Do you find that timing between every single commercial break tricky, or do you think you've gotten into the flow of it?
I've gotten the flow of it. The funny thing is, and my wife could tell you this, that if I'm watching a television show and we'll take the remote and we'll flip to another show and I want to get back to the one we're on, where we actually haven't put it on a PVR, we're actually watching it live, I can go back and they'll come up with the interstitial and they're back live. I can time 90 seconds in my head like nobody. There's an inner clock that I have that just says, you're back. And so I know when we're going a break or I'm promoing something in the 90 seconds, we generally know the production team's on their own in the truck. They're trying to set up the shot. So I know what they're doing. They know what I'm going to do. I may say to them, can I see the first shot you're coming out to during the commercial break? And I may see that. Okay, good. And then you're going here. Okay, good. And that's where the synergy comes in. When you're in sync with a production team, just like you, whoever you're working with, producer, and you know where you're going and you're going to break and you're in sync, you just start to feel it after a while. And it's such an amazing feeling. You're part of a team. And our group at FanDuel is really good. We got a really good producer, really good director, and all our APs. They're just wonderful people who know the job. So it's easy.
You're listening to Ken Daniels, who's been the longtime TV voice of the Red Wings. Next season will be his 29th season. He's had so many memorable calls over the years. And if you go back to last season, his call of Patrick Kane's overtime winner against the Blackhawks last year, it was last February, that lives in my head forevermore.
Look out here. Look at this. Look at this. From center ice, it's Patrick Kane in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Kane with the overtime winner. The Red Wings win it 3-2. The story is complete on Kane's return to Chicago.
You know, moments like that in sports, you try to rise and meet the moment. And Ken, more often than not, has met the moment in his history of covering the Wings. He actually grew up listening to legendary voice of the Blues, that being Dan Kelly, who's one of the best of the best. He talks about that, and he also talks about the advice for other young broadcasters who are looking to break into sports broadcasting. Once again, here is Cody Stedman from Saline High School with Red Wings play-by-play voice, Ken Daniels.
So the NHL, as you might know, has changed a lot in recent years. Faster pace, younger players, new rules. So what do you think makes today's game more exciting for the next generation of fans?
The talent, what these guys can do. When you think about it, I know how hard it is, A, to hit a golf ball really well, and B, to hit a baseball at 90 plus miles an hour or 100 miles, that's crazy. But to do what they do on less than an inch of blade, what they're doing, you're going to get your head taken off, and the reaction time, the twitch factor in their hands that they have to know what's coming, to make a play, to look ahead. Well, you've got a split second to do that. And you know, some guy who's 220 pounds is trying to run you through the boards. It's amazing just the skill level, the speed. From a broadcast standpoint, it's almost too fast, where you don't get the time to tell the stories that you would have liked to before, because you can start one in the corner, you know, overplay. And these guys are so fast. And that's where from a broadcaster looking, saying, do I have time to even get this 7-second story in? Because you can be down the ice and a shot on goal in 3 seconds. That's how fast, boom, 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 the pass can happen. So you got to pick your spots as a broadcaster. You hate to miss a goal. That's the dreaded part of this business, is you want to try to fit stuff in. Maybe there's a story, maybe there's a cute little anecdote you can put in, but you don't want to miss the goal. And the game is so darn fast now. The skill level that these kids are showing, the 15-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds coming up, and they go, this kid's going to be a star. And you watch them play and you go, holy cow. And when you see players from the past say, I couldn't do that then. And the technology from the sticks and the skates and everything they have, the game is just that much quicker. Is it that much better than it was? I guess in many ways it is. I love the game in the old days too. So it's just changed to all about speed and skill now.
So you've had a front row seat to some amazing Red Wings moments. Is there one game, one call, or maybe one player that really stands out to you as really an unforgettable thing?
Well, for me, for the Red Wings, I had the luxury of, you know, being a large part of seeing of Nick Lidstrom's career as one of the greatest defensemen of all time, 7 Norris trophies, his best defenseman, 2nd most all time. And he did all that after the age of 31. If you can believe it, to your point where the skill and my point where the kids are coming up now and they're winning them at 22 years old and Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes and these kids are so good at a young age, but that's how great Lidstrom was. But for me, the player I love to watch the most, and I coined the phrase, the Datsuki and Deke, was Pavel Datsyuk. But for me in Detroit time to watch Pavel Datsyuk and the anticipation when he came over the boards and to see the things that he could do and turn players inside out. And you talk to guys on the team and they're just amazed sitting on the bench going, how did he do that? And when you get players saying that who play with him and they marvel at it, for me watching Pavel and the calls and Mickey and just hear Mickey's laughter over a game. And that's what we're all about in our business is entertainment. And Pavel Datsyuk entertained. And I love that. Every shift he played and he gave it his all, one of my favorites of all time.
So another question I have is, how do you stay sharp and energized during an 82 game season, especially with travel, long nights, and maybe even back-to-back games?
Yeah, sometimes 3 and 4 nights. It's a crazy schedule. We do fly on Redbird, which is our team plane, so it makes it a little bit easier. You are sometimes flying back after games, and we say we have all summer to sleep, so you can do that. I get into a hockey rink for free to watch the game that I love. And if I weren't in the arena, I'd be at home watching it on television. So I'm a lucky guy, and that keeps me energized. I love to watch the game of hockey more than anything else, and I'll watch playoffs to the end. Do I wish the Red Wings were in it? Sure. Do I wish I was calling some of them? Yes. For sure. To me, it's not work. I joke that, you know, I work 24/7, 24 hours a week, 7 months a year. So it's great. You could do that and watch hockey and get paid to do it, see the games and entertain and get into the booth. And with one of my best friends, with Mickey Redmond, and to work with those you truly love and have a relationship with and to share the game with every night, it's a blast. So that keeps me energized. So it's traveling. That's changed a little bit. They've cut back on some of that now. But still, just to be out and to be in different cities, and it keeps you energized. So there could be worse jobs. Go in, you know, in this business, and you love it. And I can see you have the passion for this. And if you have the passion for anything you do, and so few people, and it's unfortunate, can say they have a passion for their job. And if you have a passion for your job, there's nothing to complain about.
Yeah. Thank you so much for actually saying that. It really does affect other young broadcasters like me wanting to go into this industry early.
Yeah. And the industry's changed, Cody. I know that. And it's become tougher to break into. But again, there will still be this business and there will need people in this business. So keep the passion. And that's what it's about.
Thank you for that. Now, you built such a strong connection with the fans over the years. And we've seen it especially whenever you're on the air. So what does it mean to you when you are the voice of the Red Wings for an entire generation?
Yeah, it makes me feel old sometimes. Even though I've got the beard going now because it's summertime, it's a playoff beard, but we're not in the playoffs. It means a lot when people come up to me and say, I've watched you my entire life. And I'm thinking, God, I hope you're not 50. So, you know, but they're in there. And I certainly understand that. So even if someone who's 35 and I've been around now 28, going on 29 seasons with the Red Wings, it means a lot that you're part of the fabric of the community. And I hope that that's been part of it too, that there's a voice, just like I grew up in Toronto with Bill Hewitt on TV, Foster Hewitt on the radio when I was young. I grew up listening to Dan Kelly because I could find the radio station on my Panasonic little twist radio that I put underneath the pillow so my parents wouldn't hear me at the age of 10 listening to Dan Kelly on 1120 Camo X out of St. Louis on a good night to find the broadcast. So I say to people, I literally dreamed my job. I'd fall asleep listening to the early years of expansion where there were teams on the West Coast, and I'd still be up at 10:30 with the radio under my pillow listening to Dan Kelly of the St. Louis Blues. So I'd listen to those voices, and they were part of me. So I understand where people say you've been part of my life and understand the, you know, that and what you can mean to someone growing up who loves the game, just like they did for me. So it means a lot.
Ken, your advice and stories that you've shared over the past few years has really shown that you have had such an impact on the entire Metro Detroit area, and especially many hockey fans that are in our area. We thank you so much for joining us today and being a big part of the Red Wings hockey team.
Thank you, Cody. My pleasure. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you, Cody. Thank you, Ken. A terrific interview.
If you follow athletics on any level, in particular at the prep level or in college athletics, you know the importance of having a strong AD, an athletics director. And an AD, essentially, you've got to be an ambassador for the school. You've got to be an ambassador to the faculty, to the staff, to the alumni. You've got to have a great relationship with your coaches so that their vision aligns with yours. And you have to have a relationship with your student athletes as well. Scheduling comes into play, hiring and firing, just pointing the direction that you want your university to go when it comes to athletics in general. And a lot of times, you know, we hear about ADs and criticism comes with that as well. But you've got to help with fundraising. I mean, I've met so many athletic directors over the years at smaller schools and then all the way up into Division I athletics. And it's a job that's not for the faint of heart. It's a job that certainly you've got to have a great understanding, great knowledge of what you want to implement and what you want your university athletics to stand for. And Steve Waterfield is the AD at Oakland University. And he spent some time with Gio Mascheri, a former student from Oakland University. And they talked about all that goes into being a Division I athletic director.
Now, in college sports, we hear a lot about the athletic director, but unfortunately, it comes usually when something happens to your favorite program and you need somebody to blame. But I know that isn't always justified. So today I wanted to investigate and understand the position of an athletic director. And joining me today to help us in gaining that understanding is the director of athletics at Oakland University, Steve Waterfield.
Hey, Giovanni, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic. So I want to start things off. So I know you're only one person, but, and I understand that the biggest, only highest priority stuff in the athletic department comes to you. So I'm curious, for all that happens in the department, what comes to your desk? Kind of what are some of the tasks that you deal with personally, and what are stuff that you delegate? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so I have a great senior staff and great coaches. And so, like you said, a lot of the day-to-day stuff falls under the areas they oversee. It's oftentimes things that either I oversee directly. So I'm the sport administrator for some of our sports, men's basketball, currently women's basketball, tennis, baseball. And so things related specifically to those sports I'm going to handle. Maybe bigger picture governance issues, the house settlement, Horizon League matters kind of work the way up through me. And then just helping folks resolve issues that come up and just kind of thinking through strategically and figuring out how to help them do what they need to do and connecting them with people on campus or representing the department on campus at various meetings or events. And just today, I'm going to meet with a recruit from one sport. And then after this, I have a recruit from another sport. And so it's really, each day is different, but it's being the point person for the department, but also resolving things and helping other folks resolve things and move this forward.
And for your schedule, like throughout the different seasons, how often are you meeting with the head coaches of each sport? Are you kind of keeping in constant contact? Or I'm curious, like, what are some of the matters that you and those head coaches discuss?
Yes, one of the great things about how we have our offices set up is the head coaches, for the most part, are all around my office. And they're all either a few steps away, a phone call away, a text away, if things come up. But in the flip side is access to me. I mean, I try to keep my door open as much as possible and invite them to come in, and they just ask me questions or how can I help them out with whatever they need.
And then how are you able to stay in contact with the student athletes? And I'm sure that becomes much more difficult just given, you know, the volume.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. I tell people the more responsibility you tend to get in athletics, the further away you get from kind of regular interactions with student athletes. When I started out as an assistant compliance director at Ohio State, I would get interactions with student athletes on a host of things all the time, every day. So what I try to do is spend time going to events and competitions. For the past couple of years, I've invited student athletes to meet with me, to just as a meet and greet, 15 minutes, and as their schedule allows. It's some of the most enjoyable parts of my career, just getting to spend time with student athletes and getting to know them outside of what they're actually doing from a sports standpoint.
And then from what you've seen from the student athlete themselves, a lot is made in the media about how athletes have changed nowadays and the NIL and transfer portal stuff kind of changes the attitude. But from your perspective, like, has the student athlete, their perspective, their drive, has that really changed over those years, or is it overblown, that kind of story?
Yeah, I think, like you said, there's different factors that come into play that didn't exist when I got into this 20 plus years ago. I mean, NIL, the transfer portal, the growth of social media and how that impacts things. But to the core, they're the same. They are in a wonderful time in their lives. They are elite athletes that have an opportunity to play Division I athletics and go to school. And I think that the characteristics that get them here and allow them to succeed and hopefully flourish are the same now than they were 20, 25 years ago. I think a lot of the factors around it are different, but I think at the core, to get to where they've gotten and to what they've accomplished, I think there's some just talents and characteristics that stand the test of time.
So something that I've started to notice when it comes to not just college sports, but sports in general, is I feel like there's a contradictory between the business side and the sport itself, like the purity of competition, we could say. For you having to make a lot of those decisions when it comes to that, do they kind of go against each other, the business and the sport, or do they blend in more smoothly? Because I feel like they're, at sometimes they're contradictory.
Yeah, I think sometimes there's a tension between the two. Obviously, the business piece of it, the revenue, that's important to be able to put on events and to provide student athletes with resources. And so you have to accept some of whether you call it the commercialization of college athletics, but that's just a reality that revenue is important to help our sports programs have a better experience and more resources. The other piece to it becomes, I think there's certain things that just aren't really compatible in college athletics. I mean, to me, obviously the prevalence of gambling and legal sports wagering, there's no way I would take money from that. I just philosophically, it's not right. A, it's against the NCAA rules, but just understanding how that impacts college student athletes and college students, there's not an amount of money realistically that to me makes it okay. And so there's certain things that you just have to focus on kind of the core values and what you believe is right, knowing that ultimately you also want to try to find ways to get revenue to help sports programs, student athletes have an even better competitive academic and personal experience.
And then on the other side of that, like sometimes, you know, for a department, those resources or revenue or whichever it is, isn't there enough. And unfortunately, some programs have to be cut. And I noticed specifically in the Horizon League, Cleveland State had to make a couple of cuts to their wrestling, women's golf, and their softball programs. So for certain programs, what do those teams have to do to stay alive? Or is this unfortunately just the nature of the business?
Yeah, I think each institution makes decisions based on the institution and we're all different. I'm obviously a big believer in opportunities and keeping the opportunities that we have. So many of our sports programs have student athletes that pay a large portion of their own tuition, room and board to come here. And if you look at what the tuition revenue is being driven, it far outweighs the athletic scholarship piece of it because most don't get full rides. And so there's actually a net positive from a revenue standpoint by having student athletes. But you also just with any kind of endeavor, you've got to be mindful of costs. It costs more to take a bus trip now than it did 10 years ago, even though you're taking it to the same place. And so you have to grow revenue, but also be sensitive to how do you build a schedule? How do you focus on the things that are going to have the most impact for the student athlete experience?
And I want to bring this to a more positive note before we finish up here. There was a recent hire in Oakland University Athletics, Keisha Newell, for women's basketball. It's the first hire of a basketball coach Oakland's had in the past 12 years. So I'm curious for the process of acquiring a new coach, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think with every head coach search, at least the ones that I do, you start out with a group of candidates and you just vet it. And to me, you cast as wide a net as possible and see who's interested in the position, see who may be interested. You have conversations about, okay, what's their approach to recruiting, to building teams, offense, defense? How would you build out a staff? What do you do from a a student athlete development standpoint, what are the recruiting pipelines? What situations arise that can be challenging and how have you addressed and dealt with them? And so you kind of go through that process and learn about them. And ultimately, you look at factors that you think are important for success at this specific institution. And end of the day, and very excited to get Coach Newell here, you decide who is, in your opinion, the best candidate for the job now and into the future.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Mr. Waterfield. Hopefully for us watching, get a better perspective as to the thought process and the decisions made by athletic directors.
Yeah. Hey, Giovanni, I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Steve Waterfield, Oakland University AD, interviewed by former Oakland University student Giovanni Mascheri, who's with sportscaster.com. If you'd like to hear the entire interview or any part of tonight's show, all you have to do is log on to sportscaster.com and you can watch the full videos with all our guests. As we go big picture around the association, talking about the National Basketball Association, the playoffs are underway. You can throw the regular season records out. It's been absolute theater, even if you're a casual fan of professional basketball. And two guys who are far from being casual fans are Cooper Schoenberg and Carter Lutz. Cooper's a sports media major at Indiana University. Carter is a broadcast journalism student at the University of Miami. Both are involved in the Sportscaster program, and they weigh in on this year's NBA playoffs.
Thanks for having us back on WJR Open Mic presented by Sportscaster. Cooper here alongside Carter Lutz. And we got a fun one. We are in the thick of it. NBA, NHL playoffs, the heat of the MLB season just starting. And today we're going to be discussing the most dangerous, the most cutthroat players in each conference. Let's get right into it. Starting off with the Western Conference. Carter, who do you got as that most dangerous player in the playoffs?
I like the question, first of all, because we're at that time of the year where you got to be a killer on the court. For instance, Jalen Brunson, he just killed the Pistons. We didn't like it, but he was a killer on the court.
Yeah.
And before we get to the East Coast, let's get to the West.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a man who somehow is still underrated at this point, Nikola Jokic. Nikola should be a five-time MVP at this point. There's a little something called voter fatigue going on.
Yep.
That's a separate topic. But Jokic, man, he comes out here. Game one happens. He takes over. Over 40 points, over 20 rebounds.
42 and 22. Like, what?
It's different. It's out of this world. You sent me a screenshot of his numbers earlier in the year. You said, can we just talk about this right now? Because it's crazy. But it's happening. It's consistent. It's hard to bet against the Denver Nuggets right now. They have the best player in the NBA. I think by far, Nikola. I don't know how he's still doing it, but he is. Yep. I'm going to go with him as my most dangerous player left in the Western Conference.
He's got a lot of tools in the box. I think that's what definitely makes him the second most dangerous player playing alongside guys like Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, Christian Braun.
And he's out here coaching the team as well, I have to say.
He's great.
He's got a clipboard and pen. He's showing the boys what they need to do, and they're advancing. We'll see what happens.
He's a man amongst men, but the manliest man amongst many men is the guy from down south Georgia now playing with the T-Wolves. I'm talking about the Ant-Man. Yes. Call it cliche or an obvious pick, but the guy, under 25 years old, maybe under 24 years old, he's ridiculous. What he did last year, sweeping the Suns in the first round, making a nifty little run in the Western Conference. Now he's back as the sixth seed, taking down the three-seeded, star-studded big three, LeBron, Austin Reeves, Luka Doncic, down in the first round with ease. Not in six, not in seven, in five. This man is dangerous. When you need him most, he is there. He shows up for you with the big-time moves, with the big-time shots in a deep team. A deep team with Naz Reid, with Mike Conley, with Rudy Gobert manning the five. It's a deep team and a dangerous player. We're going to get to our finals predictions, but that's a little foreshadowing, if you will. So I'll just leave it be. Anthony Edwards is my most dangerous player in the Western Conference, and he's going to keep being that most dangerous player. Now, moving into the East.
Well, you didn't let me rebuttal.
Okay, rebuttal.
Ant Edwards, he's a killer. He's out here doing things on a Michael Jordan-like level.
Sure.
And we talk about Nikola Jokic. Ant-Man took him out last year. So I like the pick. I think he's a stud. He's not on that level yet. We're going to get there soon. We're going to see what happens. I think he's got a good matchup as well with the Warriors. So
yep.
I think it's going to happen. He's the most fun player to watch. That's for sure.
100%.
I like the pick. I don't love it. I like it.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to take that. I'm going to take what I can get. Moving on to our side, the Eastern Conference side. And I wish we were still in it because obviously the most dangerous player right now would be Cade Cunningham. Unfortunately, the flopper of all floppers took him out. Don't want to talk about it. It's a touchy subject. But Carter, I want to hear who you got in this Eastern Conference. Kind of wide open. Let me hear what you got.
It's pretty open right now.
Yeah.
We saw the Celtics show that they're not the Celtics of last season, maybe. We'll have to see. The Knicks making it a series. But I'm going to shift over to the other series. We said we wanted to get a little bit weird with our Eastern Conference picks. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with Tyrese Haliburton. Because he's taking this Indiana Pacers team. He did it last season. He took them to the Eastern Conference Finals. They went to six games with the Boston Celtics. He's passing the ball. He's moving the rock. He's scoring. Step back. Money jumper.
Yep.
I like what Halliburton's doing. He's a fun player to watch. And guess what? He was voted by his peers. By the people on the court.
Yep.
His peers.
Yep.
As the most overrated player in the NBA. By a survey from the NBA players. I like what he's doing right now. This Pacers team might be special.
Yeah.
They might be showing to be even a little bit better than they were last season. They've been underrated this year. They're a good team. That's a good squad. He's got Siakam down low doing work.
Yep.
Scoring, doing what he does best.
Yep.
Miles Turner.
Yep.
A great center in this modern NBA. I like what Halliburton's doing. I like the pieces around him. Tyrese Halliburton's my pick.
I wish I could come back and argue, but I really, really like the take. You got two reallys out of me. I'm not going to love it because I got my own guy, but I really, really like the take. Obviously, playing with a little chip on his shoulder, being called most overrated. I'm not the biggest Tyrese Haliburton fan, but similar to how the Tigers got hot at the end of last year and made a little playoff run, that's exactly what the Pacers did and are doing right now. You talk about Miles Turner. Right, you talk about Pascal Siakam, but then you also got T.J. McConnell, Benedict Mathurin, Andrew Nembhard.
Rick Carlisle, love him.
Great coach.
A solid coach.
Bald-headed assassin. You got to love him.
I do like him.
My player, though, with a little bit of accent, going to the Haba. It's not Jason Tatum. It's not Jaylen Brown. It's Drew Holiday, okay? That's where
crazy.
It gets a little. That's where it gets
crazy.
A little quirky. Now, maybe most pivotal, important, influential player on the team. But I'm going to go with most dangerous because here's my prediction. Now, his numbers are not too flattering, shooting 44% from the field, only averaging really 11 points. But his defensive prowess, boom, big word for me right there. Defensively, he is stout. He's a seasoned vet, winning a ring with Giannis and the Bucks just back in 2021, then winning one last year. He's a two-time champ. He knows what to do, and the players that know what to do the most in these types of situations late in the season, late in the postseason, prove to be the most dangerous. But Drew Holiday, watch the big guy out of UCLA take over in these playoffs, and I think, you know, you can rebuttal, but that's going to set up kind of our predictions. What do you think about the Drew Holiday take?
It's interesting. It's different. I like it. We like to be different. And with Holiday, I think it's fun because he was the X factor that Boston needed last season that brought him over the edge, brought him over the hump. And he hasn't been too consistent this year. So if he can catch fire, if he can do some special things on the court for Boston in TD Garden, he changes their team. He makes them different because they have that star power, but he's that role player. He might be the best role player in the NBA.
Yep.
I like the pick as well. Both got some fun picks out here.
Sure.
And the reason we're wrapping up our conversation now, the reason I like this segment is because it's going to age like fine wine.
Beautiful.
We're going to see what happens.
Like a nice fromage.
On the West, we got two different players in different series. The East, we have the same thing. What if these two teams meet, all four of them, four different teams meet in the conference finals? Could be fun. Could be special.
Yep. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see how these playoffs pan out. It's been fun already.
Fun series.
What is happening? Pandemonium. Excited to see how it shapes out. We'll be back here on WJR.
Good stuff from IU's Cooper Schoenberg and University of Miami's Carter Lutz. We'll see how it all plays out here in the NBA playoffs. And God willing, next season, the Pistons will be back in the postseason. That is our show for this week. For Cooper and Carter, for Giovanni Mascheri and Oakland University AD Steve Waterfield, and for Cody Stedman and Ken Daniels of the Red Wings, we thank you for being on, and we thank you for listening. You can catch Open Mic every Wednesday from 8 to 9 right here on WJR. I'm your host, Johnny Kane. Until next time.